Welcome to Dynasty As They Want to Be, a podcast where we drill into every episode of the iconic 1980s television series, Dynasty. I'm your host, Tarek J. Lang, and with me is my co-host, Kyler K. Jafari.
So we went to see Stevie Nicks at the PGA golf tournament special hot festival thing.
It's called the American Express now.
Okay, well, I was avoiding the, you know, sign of the devil, but okay. You know, she's still got an amazing voice, I gotta say.
Well, it's... my mom did text me and she said, how was Stevie Nicks? And I said, Stevie was Stevie. And then my mom texted me back.
Which means exactly what?
Well, she explained. So then she texted me back, once a rocker, always a rocker.
Okay, well.
Great logic from Donna Lang.
Sure, that's fine. Look, I'm sure she's tired of doing the same 10 songs over and over. So, like, I'm just going to write her a blank check because she's basically responsible for everything I loved about pop music as a child. So, you know, I'm glad she's still, like, doing her witchy thing. Yeah. And it was, like, funny because we were, like, in line, like, to get a beer or something. Which I loved that they were out of wine and all they had left was IPA, which is actually what we were going to order anyway, which I don't like love IPA, but, you know, that's fine.
I certainly would rather have an IPA over a shitty glass of hot white wine.
Hot Chardonnay, no less. Yeah, but, like, the women in front of us were like, wearing, like, black trench coats with shaggy black fur collars, and they had the, you know, Trans Am red fingernails.
They were super fans.
Yeah, they were like ultra fans.
I think they just follow Stevie around every like golf tournament.
But you know, it's like, it's nice to know that like there's still a following and like people are out there and ready for her. And I just think that's great. So
yeah, totally. Well, speaking of legends, if you haven't heard it yet, listeners, we released our bonus episode with my phone conversation with Dame Joan Collins. Kyler, what did you think? You didn't get to participate in this conversation. Were you having a little bit of FOMO after you heard the bonus
episode? No, I was having JOMO. I was having joy of missing out. No, I feel like you were just basically there just taking me down on all of my opinions. Everything was just like, you know, you asking questions that I always talk about so that Joan could say no to everything, which is fine, you know, because like, look, at the end of the day.
You thought I was throwing you under the Joan bus?
You even went so far as to mention the bitch and she's like, no, the stud. And I was like, okay, that's how it's going to be. All right.
So wait, are you mad at me or are you mad at Joan?
I'm angry at the sun. I'm yelling at the sky. Like, I don't know what to do with all of that, but I think Joan is a good example of like a great actress that years later, she's not really there to talk about. She's not there to like dissect the corpses, and she just wants to be Joan, and she clearly is.
But don't you think it was really remarkable? Because I started pressuring her. I realize I went a little too far with the Dynasty questions. But she was very gracious. She was...
No, she was more than gracious to put up with your nonsense.
And, she was hospitable.
I can't even imagine. I'm blushing at what you must have cut out because what I heard was already bad enough. But
no, I thought she was so sweet. You know, she wasn't just like turning over either. Like if there was something I said and she didn't agree with, she corrected me. But that's what you want from her, right? And she does it in such a way that's like, you're like, please, master, thank you more.
You know? I mean, I want Joan to show me how to be better. Mm-hmm. I'm not a real person until Joan tells me how to do it. So I'm fine with that.
Well, and I like the fact that she realizes how, you know, she's done a lot in her career, obviously, but like Dynasty is a big hallmark and she recognizes that. And I think she's grateful for it. And is thankful that it's still out there in the consciousness. But I think maybe she learned a little from me, too. I think...
Oh, come on.
No, I just think maybe she didn't realize that the show is still relevant. And I thought it was kind of cool how she said she's watching it because she didn't really watch it while they were filming it. So maybe one day she'll come and she'll watch it with us and we can talk about it. Dream of dreams.
Well, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, when you live through your best moments in life, like, you're not really, like,
reflecting in the moment. Right.
You're not taking it apart as it happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She is lucky in the sense that she can just watch what it was.
Right. Just, we're not all that lucky where we can,
you know, yeah, a lot of us
have a DVD,
like,
box set of our life.
We don't have, like, a DVD box set of our, you know, our golden years. Anyway. That said, I've made a lovely cocktail this evening.
Yeah, tell us what we're drinking.
One of my
tonight.
Favorites. We've had dinner, and this is an after dinner, and it's the Japanese.
What'd you call me?
The Japanese.
What is that?
I don't know. It's there's a few variants, but it's generally a brown liquor, usually cognac, and it's heavy on the Angostura bitters, but you could use other bitters if you'd like, and orgeat. Which is that thing that, like, usually shows up in tropical drinks, but, like, the real ones, not, like, the fake ones they make now. Which is an almond syrup that's, like, flavored with roses and vanilla and, you know, various strange third world spicings. Yeah, so it's sort of a flavor profile that doesn't really turn up in drinks.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little sweet, but it's not saccharine, and it's a little deep, but it's not, you know, too heady.
It's not dank.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I love it. Anyway, well, should we take a break and get into this week's episode?
No, I just want to keep rattling on about whatever this nonsense is that we're talking about.
No, let's take a break.
All right, we'll take a break. So I had to go get my hair cut, and I don't go to the mechanic with a dirty car, so I had to wash my hair, and I was excited because, you know, I'm very picky about what happens upstairs, and the results were, like, seriously
sexy. What Kyler is referring to is our new sponsor, Sauce Beauty. It's a delicious hair care line inspired by the recipes you love.
Yeah, I'm gonna change my routine.
They have, like, different flavors. So the moisturizing shampoo is a island marinade, and the moisturizing conditioner is a creamy house dressing. So, I mean, it's basically just like pouring ranch all over your body. But that's not what it is. These aren't actually edible.
Yeah, don't eat them.
No. There's legit ingredients in here, okay? The moisturizing conditioner, for example, has buttermilk, Greek yogurt, shea butter. And what you should know about Sauce Beauty is that all of the products are clean. That means they're free from sulfates, salt, and parabens. That's stuff you do not want to be putting in your dude, daddy.
Yeah, I mean, this is like my secret sauce.
It's not a secret anymore. We're letting everybody know about it. Kyler and I are really proud that Sauce Beauty is supporting Dynasty as they want to be. If you would like to try Sauce, you can check it out. Their website is saucebeauty.com. They're also available at Amazon, Sally Beauty, and Wegmans.
Oh my God, Wegmans. This is my favorite New Jersey grocery store.
Well, I have to say, I don't know if I'm in a bad mood or what, but I did not like this episode.
I think it's, you know, it's not high or low. It's just, you know, it's on the spectrum, but yeah, not enjoying it as much as I did other episodes. So I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. So there is a lot going on in this episode. I will give it that, but I wasn't jiving with it. I wasn't feeling it. It wasn't making me tingle down between my thighs.
Well, you know, they can't all be hits. And, yeah, this season's been pretty amazing. So, yeah. You know, and this is still a great episode compared to, you know, season one, while it was, like, aspiring to certain things. You know, I feel like everything in this season is still on caliber, and including this episode. There's some moments with Steven and this whole, like, you know,
gay for pay.
It's definitely drifter. It's regressive, you know, so that's probably, like, that's a little bit on the side. And then you have, like, Claudia.
Ugh, that's what I hate.
I'm so irritated with what they're doing with her right now.
Same.
So yeah, those two things are, like, like vastly inferior right now.
Well, let's start at the bottom, and that has to be this Crystal Claudia Blaisdell plot. What is supposed to be going on with Claudia? I feel like nobody's explained it. Is she crazy now? She's, well, first of all, they've got her back in the G.D. Carrington mansion. Is there nowhere else to convalesce in Denver? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. Why is she going back
not
to that?
Not if you're looking to like live off somebody else's dime. No, like this is like the way to be right now.
Well, the first time that she was there, I think she was kind of like lapping it up, and it was a sort of staycation moment for her. But this, it seems like Dr. Toscani's like, yeah, you have to go to the Carrington Mansion. And Crystal, of course, wants to keep her there so she doesn't get arrested for gun assault.
Well, I feel like Crystal's like keeping her under supervision or something. And I'm not really sure why. It doesn't really make much sense. The other thing is essentially Claudia, Sylvia Plath Beljar moment or something. I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Did the bullet lodged in her brain make her crazy come back, or is this already her previous mental health issues?
No, it made her into a whole other character and a bad actress on top. Like, I don't know what's happening, and it's very disturbing. And well, I kind of want to just like bury it.
Can we talk about the turban? She looks like one of the characters from Tron.
Oh, that's, I didn't think about that, but yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, it's definitely like we're taking away her power by taking away her hairdo.
Yes, so, Samson.
So bring on the medical turban. Yeah.
And then the other thing is they're dredging up this Matthew Blaisdell stuff. I thought we had moved on from that.
Yeah, this is so done. This is so over. Like, even in Claudia's crazed imagination, this has to be, like, not a thing that matters anymore. Like, why are we still talking about Matthew Blaisdell? Like,
and then to hear Alexis.
She never really even loved the guy, apparently.
No. And, like, they wrote him out. If you write somebody out, move on.
Well, I suppose that any woman is entitled to be defensive around another woman whose husband she had an affair with. I presume you know about Mrs. Carrington's relationship with Matthew Blaisdell.
I really hated hearing Alexis say the name Matthew Blaisdell, too. It just felt icky.
You just wash your filthy mouth, lady.
Even that gingy detective, he cannot wrap his head around what the hell is going on with these psychotic rich people.
Can we talk about the detective? He makes zero sense in context of this show. He's like off the set of like Kojak or I don't know, like T.J. Hooker,
yeah,
something,
or like a Hitchcock movie. But the way that he speaks is very—he
just does not fit in like on this show. And I'm not saying because he's not fancy, but there's something like just sort of like I don't know.
Well, I mean, even his drink order, Alexis is like, "Can I get you something?" And he said, "Yeah, something soft
and not carbonated."
Who orders something like that?
Well, I mean, isn't that a euphemism for erectile dysfunction or something?
If somebody came over and I asked them if they'd like something to drink, and they requested something soft and non-carbonated, I would open the door and I would say, thank you very much for coming. You can leave now.
Well, I don't know. Like, hot Chardonnay is kind of soft, right? It's not carbonated. Anyway, yeah, I don't think there's, like, much to investigate. And yet this guy is hanging around and insinuating himself. He's like, questioning Crystal?
Well, he wants to question Claudia Blaisdell, but both
right.
Dr. Tortellini and Crystal are keeping her, you know, under wraps. And it's like,
literally,
if a judge really wanted it to happen,
well,
it would have happened.
No court in Denver, Colorado cares this much, so they're not going to,
yeah, know. I mean, if I don't care, I'm sure the courts don't care. The other dead end, I guess, is Dr. Cipino and Fallon's relationship. So she goes out and flashes him in the bikini, which was like kind of a funny moment, but because he won't take her to the Caribbean for a doctor's conference, now they've just broken up. In one scene, it's all over.
What about our trip? You promised.
You know what you need? You need a baby rattle so you can bang it every time you don't get something you want. Now you're behaving like a selfish brat who's been offered a treat and had it taken away. Now stop it.
Oh, great. Fine. Is that what you really think of me?
Doctor?
Yes.
The thing with Fallon and Jeff is, like, this was, like, sort of one of those weird things back then, which hopefully is not still a thing, where, oh, we've been separated, but, you know, we're going to have, like, some sexy times on the side, and maybe that's going to make it all better. And even, like, Jeff is thinking that, and Fallon and all of her...
Well, he just got all horny seeing her breastfeeding or whatever, because... all he cares about is having a nuclear family.
Yeah, apparently that's what turns Jeff on, right? He's apparently the mother in this relationship. It's like crazy because...
yeah, his fetish is being born.
Fallon like barely acknowledges that she's a mother, and then like she kind of has this motherly moment
for 3 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. Count them. Yeah, it's interesting how he's like more matronly than she is in this relationship. And then he's like, oh, but we just had like makeup sex. And she's like, we're still separated. Like, that's not really going to fix anything. So don't think we're getting back together. So it's interesting that like she again is like playing this sort of, you know, authoritarian role in that relationship. But, you know, it's obviously not going to work out, which it never was anyway. So I don't know why we like keep getting strung along by the writers, but there it is.
Yeah. Nobody at home today or in 1982 is rooting for these two, are they? I mean, they're terrible together.
They're terrible together. She's not a great mom. He's kind of a sucker, but I guess it's cute that he wants to be a dad. So that's fine. But even there, like, it's not enough to like really salvage much of anything with a story with these two. So this is sort of like wearing itself thin, coupled with the situation that we have with Claudia, like, who's totally become like a robot character. Like, there's nothing really happening there. It's just all like words on a page at this point. So I don't know. And then you get like the sort of like regressive melodrama with Steven and this hustler guy. Like, what's with like writing checks? That's another thing in this episode. Like, there's a lot of like writing checks,
well,
which is
whole
like a way to make things go away.
That whole first scene with Steven was baffling to me. First of all, they're in like a getting drunk in a diner, and the music is so loud. They're playing like honky tonk.
There's not a lot of watering
music.
Holes that are open before 11 a.m.
in
Denver.
Santa Fe.
Santa Fe. You're right. We're still in New Mexico. So.
Yeah. And like, hello, Santa Fe. It's not like it's some itty bitty town in the middle of Nowheresville. Like, it's a legitimate town.
It's a small enough town. And could you imagine Santa Fe in 1982?
And there was sure no explanation smaller. Of how Steven went from L.A. to Santa Fe. Is that on the way back to Denver?
Maybe he was just like listening to like that Dionne Warwick song and like just wound up in Santa Fe.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that was San Jose. Never mind. I don't know. Whatever.
I'm too drunk to notice. That you totally could have got that one by me. But, and then he like spills his entire.
Do you know the way to Santa Fe?
But yeah, he spills his whole life story to this damn stranger. And it's like, I know Steven is like very sweet and all, but doesn't he know better than to just spill his guts to some rando?
Well, this is another interesting, you know, like, obviously we had like Midnight Cowboy like years and years before this. Like what was that? 69, 71, something like that. But, you know, they're like, we had finally acknowledged like that men were capable of like being salacious and selling themselves for, you know, sexual favors. So like you're getting this like bizarre moment where this guy's basically a hustler, and I don't know if he's like taking advantage of for fame, for money. I don't know what he's.
Yeah, I mean, he realized who Steven was, and that
this
he
is
could
why
be
you don't write checks
a
at diners
ticket.
Because the guy you're having coffee with is going to see your name on the checkbook, and it's all over after that.
Well, those beers were also $2.50. You can't. He literally had no other money, and then he thought writing a check was going to work. But anyway, taking that illogical maneuver out of it, like, I don't know what this drifter's game was. Like, did he just want to fuck Steven for money? Or was he going to try to grift him?
No, he was a total hustler. He was just like looking for a way to skim some money. That's all this was about.
And yeah, but when Steven didn't go for sex.
Remember he had that moment at the payphone? Remember what payphones were? You know, you like put a nickel in it or something and people would talk to you.
I've only seen them in movies. I'm a millennial.
Yeah, but like, you know, he's like talking to like, I don't know, his boss or partner in crime.
No, I think he was like his gal because he's like, honey, I'm going to pay the rent tonight after I go suck this rich oil tycoon off.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, obviously it plays itself out because then they're in the rental Mustang as they arrive in the Denver city limit.
Well, I do applaud the Denver PD because they were right there as soon as these guys started tussling. Well,
it's just like you don't walk in the room until something's happening. You know, the police don't happen to drive by unless Stephen Carrington's beating the shit out of this hustler.
Well, good for Stephen because this guy's not going to get anything out of it.
I will give it to Stephen, though, because he's like, you've got the wrong guy. I'm not into this. I'm not there for that. And the hustler just keeps pushing it, right?
Yeah, and then he gets his face beat in.
Well, you know, hey, look, violence is never the solution, but the guy obviously deserved it, so.
So violence was the solution?
No, it really wasn't. And, like, you know, here we go, cops to not save the day. Like, cops just never show up for the right reason or at the right time.
And we got another damn opera. Carrington going to jail. Crystal's probably going to be sharing the cell with him next week.
But,
so,
you know, this is another of that, like, you know, 80s ethos. If you've got enough money, it doesn't matter if you go to jail because it doesn't really change anything in your life.
Yeah, the stakes didn't seem that high to me in this scenario. Yeah, so it's hard for me to care about.
You know, I'm not going to have access to his hair care products for a couple of days. But other than that,
now I care. I got super excited last week for the reveal that Cecil Colby is actually Logan Rinewood. And then this week we get a little peek into his secret lair. And then he's like having a heart attack watching the tape back and has to take some pills. And I'm like, what? Where did this come from? It didn't make any sense to me. And then the whole rest of the time is him spent hiring Tony to be his new head gardener.
As the audience, we felt the same way when we saw that happening. So maybe that's what he's, I don't know. He's like, I don't understand. Blake's such an idiot. Who knew? Like, this oil magnate was so bad at making business decisions. Also, why is Tony Driscoll suddenly becoming like a big thing on the scene here? Like,
he's the hottest guy on Dynasty.
Exactly. That's basically why. Because otherwise, he's just the guy who like prims the roses.
Yeah, I mean, he's like
Primps the roses? What the fuck am I trying to say?
It's pimps the roses.
Okay. Something. Who's Rose and why are you pimping her?
No, I mean, clearly he's sort of a Heather Locklear situation. You got a hot young guy who's kind of sexing up the scene. But yeah, I guess he's the linchpin with this miscarriage. I mean, nothing is ever going to get resolved.
I feel like we as the audience are so beyond that storyline, and it's like, really, we have to like keep going back and touching this up? Like,
yeah, I think somewhere in the Dynasty writers room they were like, yeah, we didn't really mind that because you've got Claudia mentioning it and now Tony is this sort of key witness.
Oh, they mind it, but they got coals instead of diamonds, so I didn't really need more of that, but that's fine. Okay. Maybe this is like more of that, like back then we needed to spend more time on things and we had a longer attention span. I don't know.
Well, the one interesting thing that comes out of it is that we never really got Blake's perspective on it. And I think Crystal kind of laid it out again. Did she really tell him before that she thought Alexis? I don't feel like she did. Like, this may have been the first time, actually, that he knew that Alexis was responsible for his wife's miscarriage.
You know, Blake is famous in the early days for his, like, real just asshole misogynistic moments and, like, kind of softened for a little bit. Yeah, here he just, like, he slams her into the sofa, which is, like, okay, it's an upholstered object. It's not, like, you know, he's pushing her onto spikes.
Well, but, and again, violence is not the answer. Like, yeah, but she did kill his unborn
child.
It's
like, whoa, okay. That's not cool. And like, you'd never see a woman do that to a dude. And like, well, maybe not even now, but certainly not in this time period.
Blake, why do you hate me so much? I love you. I've never stopped loving you.
You don't understand. You killed my child. I don't ever want to see you around here again. You understand that? I don't give a damn if this house is in your name. I'll burn it to the ground if I have to, with you in it.
It's a little bit like, makes it hard to enjoy the show because...
Well, there's nobody to root for. I'm not rooting for him for throwing a woman down on the couch, and I'm not rooting for her for killing an unborn child.
Yeah, like a race to the bottom with these two.
We do learn something shocking that I didn't think it was going to be coming up this season, and that's that they had another child who apparently was stillborn or aborted or died some way. Adam Carrington. That's a name we have never heard before.
Well, I think it was only uttered as Adam for just a brief spell.
Well, I'm assuming it's a Carrington because it's Alexis and Blake's
child. Who knows now? Like, she just throws around paternal and...
Yeah, she makes shit up all the time.
Generative names, like, all over. So, who knows? Like, you can't trust Alexis. She's always brewing up another scheme.
Yeah, but I trust the Dynasty Facebook group, and they talk about Adam Carrington all the time. It's so, I know, like, there is another...
news that, there's...
Yeah, another Carrington. I mean, come on, it's a soap opera. There was always going to be another Carrington, right?
Well, this is what soap operas do. Like, they wear their storylines thin, and then we have to start introducing new things. But this, I do feel like this was just sort of mentioned. They don't dig in on it. It just kind of disappears in the dialogue.
Right, and that's something that I'm noticing they're doing a lot now, is they mention something and then it comes
something, and then like later it sort of turns back up. And so, that's fun.
Yeah, I mean, the Logan Rinewood thing was sort of like that. Like, it was very briefly mentioned, and it wasn't sort of sold as a mystery, and then it came back around, and it was exciting, and now it's just kind of in the background.
I think the Logan Rinewood thing was a bit of a dud. It's kind of exciting as soon as it happens, and then it's like, there's not much to do with that.
Well, yeah, and Blake said that he's going to sell off premium stock to get the common stock so he has majority ownership again. And it's like, really? The solution is that easy? Well, that wasn't...
Well, this is like, okay, yeah, like Jeff is like there. They're having lunch at the St. Denis Club again, my favorite place for crab cakes and Chardonnay. Yes, hot Chardonnay. And Jeff has got zero... like creative ideas in business. So it's like, he's like, oh yeah, this is great, Blake. Yeah, selling the preferred stock for the common and blah blah blah. But it's just like, this is more of like, what is Jeff really around for? He's just basically DNA contributor to the Carrington family. That's,
I think,
kind
he's
of
there for to have somebody that Blake can talk to that's not his butler. I don't know.
Blake does like his eunuchs, so I guess there's something to that. The other thing is that Jeff says at lunch with Blake he's been tied up, and I just feel like, well, yeah, you're a submissive. He's like totally doing 50 Shades of Grey or something.
Ugh, he's not that interesting. It's time to talk about our looks of the week. This is the segment where Kyler and I pick our favorite ensembles from the episode. Kyler, give it to me.
Oh, for me, it's definitely for a few reasons. But anyway, when Alexis is, begging for, what is it, ice in the kitchen?
Oh, the turquoise.
Oh, well, it's I don't know. What is that?
Head
teal,
to toe.
Mint. I don't know. It's a certain shade of green, that's for sure. And it's paired with a squash blossom necklace. This is like kind of a look that it transcends shoulder pads, because it sort of makes a little bit of sense in the early 80s. And it could totally, I mean, it's totally like mortgage broker attire from like 1991. So you could just wear this look all the way through and like skip the shoulder pads And this is a look that was around for a long time. It's like French teacher. It's like so many things.
I just feel like there was too maybe much change the hair and makeup same
depending
thing.
But wait, you don't like the same?
It was too much. It was like the belt matched the bracelet, then the bracelet matched the necklace, and the necklace matched the other
that's
bracelet
all like,
and the
she was on a road trip through Santa Fe and she stopped by and the Navajo Indian tribe had a
like right, a, and she bought everything up at the powwow, and there was nothing left when she drove away. I wanted to like it, but it needed another dimension.
I'm going
to
say
it.
Why this is the look of the week, because this is totally unlike anything that's been on any of these episodes. And again, I think it transcends, it's sort of like, it doesn't embrace shape so much as it embraces accessorizing and just body, you know, loose but body conscious clothing. And I think the color is amazing. And I think it's just all of a look that, you know, could be then or 10 years later. I mean, maybe I couldn't wear it now, but, you know, it's just, it's not the usual, what we associate, like shoulder pads and sharp dressing and expensive makeup looks, you know.
Yeah, and the hair looked a little poodly. No, didn't like it.
Well, we've already said we don't like, you know, Joan's hair in this, like, moment, these couple of episodes.
I didn't say that. How dare you put those words in my mouth?
Well, at least I said it the last episode, and I think right now I'm not loving it either.
I just didn't like it in that scene. I much prefer her to put a hat on, and if she's going to put a hat on, a beret, and if she's going to put a beret on, it should be white, even though nothing else she's wearing is white. I don't know. There was something about her day look when she went to go meet up with Cecil. It's also the same thing she was wearing when she was talking to the gingy detective. I don't know. It seemed very prim and proper. And to me, it was all about that hat. Like, she just thought, I'm going to put a white hat on and sweep my hair to the side.
The thing there is it's a sort of a suit.
Yeah,
but
it's like a suit dress.
There's no lapel and there's no collar. So this was sort of like a new evolution of women's tailored clothing at that time. You know, and it wasn't sticking to the usual details.
Oh, yeah, that silhouette was like ubiquitous. That like round neck.
Yeah.
And then it comes down. It's like, you know, a lady blazer or something.
And it's, you know, she does it with the black opaque pantyhose.
Yeah, which Cecil grabs on.
I have a thing for forever, so.
Oh, wow.
Always,
I know what I'm going to put on tonight.
Even Cecil couldn't resist, so
no,
I don't know.
He latched on to those, and I'm sure when she walked out of Colby Co. that they probably had a nick in them. Well, that's all for this week's episode of Dynasty As They Wanna Be. Thank you so much for joining me again, Kyler.
See ya, suckers.
And thank you for making the Japanoise. It was a delightful cocktail. If you'd like to follow us, you can on all social media channels. We're at Nasty Podcast. That's NASDY Podcast. And leave us a review if you enjoyed this. Go ahead and click all them stars on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever and write up a little something about what you liked on the episode. And if you really love us, we've launched a Patreon. That's right. We've sold out. Go on our Patreon. It's just patreon.com/nastypodcast. There's a couple of little levels on there. It's all self-explanatory.
Just go check it out.
Next week, we'll be back to talk about the penultimate episode of season 2, The Two Princes.